Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is my German girlfriend, Juliana. Say hi.
Hi.
And the reason I said I'm a German girlfriend is because we live in Germany, in Berlin. And tell me a little bit about what it's like trying to find science fiction ebooks in German ebook stores. Go.
That's how it is.
What?
There's nothing to say about it. It's just awful because it's really, really, really difficult.
Yeah, well, tell me why. This is why we're getting into it.
Why? First of all, not a lot of English science fiction gets translated into German.
Yeah.
So even if you have the book translated from English to German, then it is a normal paper book.
Yeah.
Then the step from that to the ebook is, again, it's a huge step for publishers, obviously.
Yeah.
And
often,
really
sometimes
difficult.
they'll have the rights for a paper book, but not the ebook.
Exactly.
And stuff like that,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
But okay. But the real reason is once you're in there and you're thinking, okay, I'm not looking for a specific book. I'm looking for just any science fiction in German. Any science fiction in German in this ebook store, no matter if it's Amazon or on iBooks or all these other stores. What do you get?
Perry Rhodan.
Perry Rhodan.
You get Perry Rhodan.
This is going to be our Perry Rhodan episode,
exactly.
Everyone. Whee.
And people were asking previously about science fiction, German science fiction.
Yeah.
And there are quite a lot of science fiction authors, also in like the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But once you read these books and you read other English science fiction, you realize how much they just took ideas.
Yeah, they're not translation of English
they're
books.
They're not translation, but
they're
just like kind of rip-off.
Yeah, like they cover versions,
yes.
cover rip-offs of English language
and
science
because
fiction.
The English science fiction doesn't get translated, nobody realizes that until you understand both languages and kind of get into it.
You've actually said, oh, I'll read this book, and you're just like, oh, this is just like Alistair Reynolds, or this is just like a...
It's a collection of different
like
science fiction.
They've taken, this German author has taken this idea from E.O.N. Banks, and this one from Alistair Reynolds, and this one from, you know, whoever's the big, American writer at the time,
yes,
or whatever it is,
exactly.
and just puts it together into kind of generic... generic space opera stuff,
right,
with inventions taken from here and characters taken from there. Yeah. So, but anyway, let's bring it back to Perry Rhodan. So what happens is you go, hey, what is the latest science fiction? And it's Perry Rhodan. You go, well, what's the classic science fiction? Perry Rhodan. What's this? Perry Rhodan. And it's always Perry Rhodan. It gets to the point where actually these ebook stores have their own sections, don't they? They have within science fiction, there's like science fiction, you know, classic, and science fiction space opera, and science fiction, you know, steampunk.
Far galaxies.
Yeah,
or
far galaxies.
Like that. Or
and then there's science fiction, Perry Rhodan. Let's go.
Exactly.
Let's do a deep dive on this one.
Yeah, we kind of have to introduce Perry Rhodan as a new thing because...
Lots of people don't know what it is.
Lots of people won't know what it is. Also, because it is not... It doesn't get published in England or in any English... language. So it's
not translated very much.
It's not translated.
Some of it's been translated, but let's just say the scale of this. Okay, so it goes here. Perry Rhodan is a science fiction series published since 1961 in Germany, as well as the name of the main character, space opera, blah, blah, blah. So let's go down here. So it actually says it was told in a story arc. You know, they had an arc storyline, which would have been anywhere from 25 issues... to 100 issues devoted to this story. That's what they went out planning to be. It's a pulp thing. It's going to be here. You can buy these. They're kind of like these really slim novel kind of size.
Yeah,
you
something
know.
Like you read on the way when you are like in the subway or somewhere.
So it's like a pocketbook that you can carry along with you. So
exactly.
It says it was initially conceived for 30 volumes. It endured and passed 2,700 installments in May 2013. So that's a few years ago. So, you know, what does it come?
Still going.
It's still going.
It's still going.
Like as a weekly novella-sized installments, you're thinking 50 a year for 50 years or whatever it's going on. So it's 1961.
If you think that Star Trek and Star Wars and all these kind of science fiction, like really long series are epic,
you
have never encountered Perry Rhodan.
It's like the
it's
definition
the longest
of epic science fiction.
Ever ongoing science fiction thing ever.
Yeah.
So, and it's really impressive how long they stuck with it.
We're just going to, we both read the first book, because the first one, it's only like 90 pages long. It's pretty short. It's called Enterprise Stardust. We'll go into that in a minute. But we're just putting this into context. Why did we go back and read this one specific book from 1961?
It is really difficult to actually, like, if you want to start, you kind of have to start at the beginning.
Really? Yeah. You can't just, like, skip different
sections? No. The thing is, it is kind of like, it is in certain cycles, but also it's always back referencing.
Yeah.
So whenever you get a book out of, like, the number 237.
Yeah.
It will be inside a cycle, which means like within a bigger story, but also it is always the same kind of universe and it back references a lot in it. So you kind of have to, if you want to start, you have to start at the beginning.
Because these characters stick around. It says here, as the series progresses, major characters, including the titular character, are granted relative immortality, which means that they're immune to age and disease, but could suffer a violent death. The story continues over the course of millennia, including flashbacks thousands and even millions of years into the past, and the scope widens to encompass other galaxies, extremely remote parts of space, parallel universes, weirder cosmic structures, time travel, paranormal powers, weird, cute, aggressive aliens and bodiless entities with some with sheer godlike powers.
Right.
So it's just like, okay, what is in science fiction? It's in Perry Roden.
Yes.
Like all the things that
What can come up?
Well, in that way, it is, I guess, in a quite like, you know, like there is like. It's like a Star Trek kind of thing. Because in Star Trek, if they need a big power, one comes up. If they need to do some time travel, they just do some time travel. If they need to go faster than light or slower than light or got stuck here or go out there or go to this other dimension, you know, all of that kind of stuff. In these long-running series, you have to have, the time travel, the time loop episode, this one. But this has got so many stories and so many loops over. When you actually compare it to what you think of as long-running science fiction, like The Culture. We've just read through The Culture series. We're going to do our Culture wrap-up tomorrow or whenever we get around to recording that. And you think, okay, there's 10 books. How much can you really do in 10 books? And we're like, wow, that's quite a lot in 10 books. Whereas if you think with Perry Roden, of course it's like pulpy, trashy science fiction, but just the sheer volume of it means that you're going to touch on a lot of ideas
and a lot
of stuff.
Yes.
Of course, we're going into this having read one book each.
There's also not only the Perry Roden series, there's also some side things that went across,
like spin-offs.
There is the Perry Roden Action, which is a new part of the series, which is slightly on a different edge. In 2008 they started that one, and then in 2011 they started, parallel to the old one, a new series of Perry Roden, which is called Perry Roden Neo. So not only, like, I think the same is with Star Trek, where you have the big series.
Well, there's in Star Trek they've kind of restarted it, kind of rebooted it, when it says, oh, that's all happening in that own universe over there.
Right.
But meanwhile, there's this other thing over here, which is now also canon, even though it's like the same characters from a different time. What I'm thinking of, it's a little bit more like the comic book series, you know, like in off the top of Marvel. I don't know much about it, but they have their main continuity.
Yes.
And then they have like this other continuity, which is, I don't know, there's like the cinematic continuity. Mm. So the stuff that happens in the movies isn't the same story that's being told in the comics or in this other line. And then they'll do a big reboot in the comics, you know, and there's lots of time travel events and everyone gets reset and everyone is back to the start of their characters again.
Yeah, right.
And you don't
and
need
then
to...
And then they start from that point
yeah,
again.
Yeah, they start from that point again. It happens all the time in movies, you know, this is a different line of movies and then there'll be a reboot and then there's this other one going forward and then this other thing over the side. Oh, that's still canon, that's still official, but there was some time travel thing which just reset the switch on everyone and everyone's back into their positions and with all the bad guys are back alive again and all the good guys are back alive, you know, all the people you've killed off are back again and that kind of thing.
So you can start again from scratch.
So it feels like that might be, we're just talking about this from our exposure to this and Wikipedia page. Also, there's some conventions as well. You saw that on the German Wikipedia page.
Yeah, so they do something that's called WorldCon.
There's a Perry Roden WorldCon.
And it takes place in Germany, of course.
Yeah.
And
of course,
it's really amazing. Like starting reading and getting more interest in this kind of stuff, you realize, wow, there's a total other subculture going on in Germany, which I never even encountered.
Well, I first
I always just thought, I don't want Perry Rhodan. I want just normal science fiction. Oh, Perry Rhodan again.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's a really, really, really huge success.
It is one of those things where you go like, oh, I'm a science fiction fan. Oh, you're into Star Trek. And I'm like, no, I've only ever watched like two episodes of Star Trek in my life.
Right.
Oh, you're really into science fiction. You really like this movie or that thing. It's like, well, no, I'm more of a reader, you know. Oh, you like, you know,
they
these
even
books.
Have their own like...
Scroll down on the Wikipedia page. It shows that there's a this bookshelf here. And it's just like all of this exactly the same kind of book, you know, it's the same cover, it's a Perry Rhodan, it's just got a number or a year and a number and an issue number or whatever.
Yeah, you can see
it is.
It's a collection of...
And that was my first exposure to Perry Rhodan, was going into a bookshop here in Germany and looking for science fiction and seeing this stuff, and I'm like, what's this? And I was like, is that like a short story collection, or is it like, I just didn't, like, it was so weird to me that there was just this massive bookshelf. No, like four bookshelves or something, all of Perry Rhodan. Of course, you know, there's 2,700, as of a few years ago, 2,700 distinct science fiction works.
And when you go into a bookshop
and seeing that and just going, do people...
Not
what?
Only that, but it's like a German science fiction, it also is in like Germany, Brazil, China, France, Italy, Japan, Russia, Czech Republic and the Netherlands.
Yeah.
This is where it is published.
Yeah.
So
is it translated into Portuguese
probably.
And Chinese?
Yes. The thing with this one is it has a very American English kind of name. So it's
Perry Rhodan.
And you think, this sounds American.
Yeah.
But no American would ever have heard about it.
Yeah, but it was one of those weird things, because I think it was actually in that bookshop, which was the first time I ever saw, like, because in the science fiction world, not my science fiction world, but when you see on the internet people talk, especially in short stories, people talking about like authors being published, they want to be published in Asimov Science Fiction, and you know, they talk about these other science fiction. Like magazines, which were for short fiction, and I'd never seen one ever, like in my entire life. I even had a podcast talking about science fiction, and I'd still never seen one of these, you know, Asimov's, and I can't remember the names of these other magazines. Oh, there's Lotus magazine, which is like about science fiction. They have reviews and stuff, and I'd never seen any of them. And it was only when I actually went into like a bookshop where they in Germany, where they had this Perry Rhodan, and at the same time they had these other science fiction these magazines, and I'm like, oh, this is a world of science fiction, short story magazines and pulp magazines, which I'd never been exposed to, because all of my access to science fiction was via you know, bookshops in the UK, bookshops and libraries in the UK, and short science fiction collection. I mean, I read lots of science fiction, but it was only when it was collected into, you know, the year's best of, or you know, these different compilations. No,
yeah,
what do you call
compilations.
Them? You know, these different. Publications which weren't inside the magazines. It was like first published in Asimov's or first. I don't know why I always coming back to Asimov. There's others as well. My mind is blanking now. And also a lot of my favorite science fiction authors is like, yes, my first ever book was published in this magazine, and then never actually kind of worked out what that magazine was. But you know, the short fiction that is or was. Not so much more, because now people are publishing more online, and there's different collections of doing way of doing it. But that was a, you know, it's massively influential of who becomes the next writer. You know, who becomes the next novelist. Who they build up a fan base, or they get some following by as being short story writers first, and they put out novels. But all of those short stories, I would only get in the collections. They would pass me by. So
on the German Wikipedia page about Perry Rhodan, you actually can also find all the authors that are. That are included, like that contributed to the Perry Rhodan series, because it is actually not one author writing the story.
Of course not. 2,700 books. Yes, because we didn't even talk about
loads
that,
of them already died.
Yeah. So the main guys, or put it this way, we just read the first book called Enterprise Stardust. You can find it online. Like I just got it as a PDF. You can get it as an English translation. Now this is actually written by. Let's have a look here on Goodreads. It says it's written by Carl Herbert Scheer, K.H. Scheer, who's the, I guess he's came up with the characters and stuff. And then Walter Ernsting, also known as Clark Dalton. And it's not just the main character, Perry Rhodan, like, who's got like this really great American name. But of course, to make the book sell, it's sort of like, yeah, this is totally a German thing. And we're writing it for the German audience. But we want to put on a real veneer being like, yeah, it's like...
It's all international.
It's international. And this is about the characters who are in America and they're Americans and they've worked for NASA. And it's about NASA scientists going into space.
Right.
So Clark Dalton is like super...
It has, like, based on this kind of stuff, it has all the potential to get exported in the United States.
No, but it
wouldn't
be, because
countries.
There they actually have their own genuine science fiction written by genuine Americans about genuine American heroes.
But then you think, why didn't they just do it with a German guy? Because at the time...
America was the leader in space technology.
Right.
And things like that. So Clark, what other characters? The Daltons. Who are the Daltons? Is that from Lucky Luke or something? Which is a French. Is it the Daltons? Who are the bad guys in Lucky Luke?
The three little guys.
Yeah, well, they're different type sizes.
Know.
Oh, I think they're the Daltons.
Ideas.
Maybe they're not the Daltons. But I'm just saying that was another thing. Like Lucky Luke is like a French cartoon character, but who's an American cowboy, and the Daltons is again. It's like that. You know, like the Cool Hand Luke, Lucky Luke, Daltons. Yeah. Maybe I'm just coming up with the wrong name with the Daltons, but it's the kind of thing that it's just thinking about Clark. It's like Clark Kent and Daltons. It's like pure American, like we're going for an American.
And lots of these older, like former authors that contributed to that series got themselves some English sounding... how do you call these kind of names?
Pseudonyms.
Pseudonyms, right.
Yeah. Or pen names or whatever you want to
call it. Not anymore so many of them do it. Like they have also a list of actually authors, like the current authors.
Yeah.
And only like three of them have some different names which don't sound English at all.
Yeah.
So this is also something that is very, very impressive about the series. It started in 1961. And it's ongoing. And... this is something that where you can actually see people did scientific culture studies.
Yeah.
How because when you write a story, you always will show how your current status is.
Yes.
And so over time, the writing is changing. Like at some point, they say in the 1980s, people start to use. The informal do more often.
Oh, within, so yes, because it's very not, formal, yeah, in this book.
So they're not addressing each other with like sir all the time,
yeah,
sie. Like Z in German, Z and do.
In English, that's like you and thou. Like thou is
like
I mean, it's archaic now, but you know, thou art this. It's but in rather than saying thou art.
You say just you.
You are rather than thou art.
Exactly.
You know?
So,
which sounds completely crazy to me when you actually say that is.
But
that
this is the
that is the
this
difference
is the equivalent,
in English.
Of course. But because of that, you can really see how the writing style developed, how the background developed, how the inspiration developed, and all this kind of stuff. It's really quite fascinating to look at science fiction in this way.
Yeah.
And because it's such a long, ongoing series...
Should we do it? We've done the culture series. Should we do the Perry Rhodan
series?
No way. 2,700...
No, I mean, no way.
To be honest, there probably is a Perry Rhodan podcast. If we wanted to, we could probably track down like people who are going through it. I mean, it happens with... There's quite a few like Star Trek podcasts where they talk about every single episode of Star Trek.
But then it's a German podcast.
Of course
it
is. But I'm just saying that there will... If there's world cons, if there's Perry Rhodan conventions, like numerous conventions around the world, I'm sure there's Perry Rhodan podcasts.
Anyway, apart from all these books and conventions and stuff, there's also their computer games and board games and
comic books, I'm sure.
Role plays and other things. And...
a movie.
There was a movie.
Which you can watch.
Yay, on YouTube.
On YouTube. Do you have it there?
I have it here.
Just press play. Let's listen to a little bit of it.
You can take off your helmets. The atmosphere in here is quite safe to breathe.
You can take off your helmets. The atmosphere in here is quite... Okay, press stop again.
Anyway.
It actually tells the story of the first three books. And so we were just watching the first 17 minutes of this. And we're like, wow, the first... Oh, 15 minutes, because we skipped the credits. I can't remember. But apparently it's so bad, and it is bad. But
it
it's
is
so
really...
bad, it's one of those things that the fans don't admit to themselves that this movie was ever made, which is...
Right. It was a German, Italian, Spanish co-production. And the original...
Dutch as well or something like that?
Yeah. And the original movie is in Italian, and it is the one that you can find on YouTube is dubbed in such a bad way.
Of course it is.
Such a bad way. The special effects and stuff is horrible.
Yeah, you watch that and you go, wow.
But if you want to have some fun, if you really want to laugh out loud very
yeah,
hard,
watch the first 10 minutes of that.
It's not worth it.
Mission Stardust, it's called.
But you get
type
an
in Mission Stardust into YouTube. So let's go back, and we've talked about some of the worlds of Perry Rhodan and stuff like that. But let's actually get into the book itself. Like we read Perry Rhodan number one, called in English Enterprise Stardust. What's it called in German?
Unternehmen Stardust.
Okay, undertaking. Okay. This is quite an undertaking. This is quite an enterprise. So it's what? No, I'm just saying this is quite an enterprise. This is quite an undertaking to start Perry Rhodan number one. But what we actually get is we start off. I just brought up some notes here. So the characters. So we got these. It starts off with a General Pounder, and he's control guy back at home. And there's Alan D. Merchant. He's like a defense NASA, not NASA, NATO kind of guy. But so you've got some people doing stuff on the ground. They don't play into the story that much,
except to kind of keep it. But he's
going, "Hey guys, we," and this is what happens in the book and in the movie as well. It's like, "Hey everybody, we brought you together. All you reporters to get here because we've got this new rocket, and this rocket is going to the moon, and it's a nuclear powered rocket," which of course made me think of Tintin because the Tintin. Oh, you don't know this guy? Oh, okay. Well, the Tintin goes to the moon. He's got an atomic powered rocket as well, and it lands upright.
Very
you
fun.
Know on its. You know, on the tripod thing. So anyway, so they go, right, we've got this rocket and we would have lifted it up into space and built it in space, but it's actually too expensive to build it in space. So what we're going to do is we're going to launch it from the ground in different stages directly to the moon. And I was like, oh, that is actually what they did. I mean, not with a nuclear rocket, but the whole point, I mean, they could have the more efficient way or the better way of getting from the Earth to the moon would have been to launch up a spaceship into orbit around Earth,
mm-hmm.
which could fly from the Earth to the moon and not have a lander on it, but then circle around and then come back and then circle around in orbit around Earth. You know, and it would have been much better to have a spaceship which was designed to go between Earth and Mars, like a shuttle, like to
moon, move. Not Mars.
Sorry, moon. Yeah, okay. I'm thinking of Mars because that's actually now what NASA the plans that NASA would actually have now is to do that kind of thing. They want to actually build. They're not going to do it because they've had all the funding cut and it's shit politics at the moment with NASA and space like space flight in this way. But what they actually need, or what they should have done, is actually built stuff in orbit or like parked stuff in orbit. Taken up people, taken up a ship, you know, fixed it together, but it would have taken too long and
of
it was
course.
A space race.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, let's do it from taking off. And that's why when I've actually gone to the Kennedy Space Center and I'd never quite worked out, I'd never really understood like I've never really grokked it, you know, it never really been firmly in my head just how big the Saturn V rocket was.
Right,
and
yeah.
I mean, I'd seen pictures of it and I'd seen people standing next to it and that kind of stuff, but then I'd always seen the pictures of the Kennedy Space Center and they had a big rocket like laying down sideways there, you know, some of them are standing upright and then there's this really big one lying down. I always thought, oh, that's the Saturn V. It turns out it's not. It's like a Saturn 1 or a Saturn 2. And then we went into this massive big exhibition space, like this massive big, well, hangar, you know, aircraft hangar kind of size thing. And we went in and the door opened and I went and it was just the five rocket motors of the back, you know, of this.
Yeah.
Of the Saturn. I showed you the photos of me standing there and I got a video of me juggling there. But I went in and it was one of those kind of things where you just went, oh,
this is it.
And it was one of those kind of not life-changing moments, but all this thing that I'd always imagined, like, oh, to get those two guys to land on the moon and to get back in and fly home took five of those engines, but not just five of them, because then there was another, you know, another load of engines and then another load. How many stages there were, I don't even know,
but
18
beside,
different rocket
beside,
engines in total.
Beside all that stuff,
this
is what impressed me the most was this book. The whole story is set in 1961.
It's set in 1972.
Yeah, but
it was written in 1961.
Yeah, but it's written in 1961, but it is like 8 years before they actually did
the
moon
landing. Yeah,
that's what
I'm saying. What I wanted to bring into this is actually, it's quite fun science fiction in a way, like this was written before people went to the moon, and it was about people going to the moon. And it is, in some ways, he got I don't know who, I say he, the author, whoever, whichever of these authors actually contributed to this book specifically, like, what some of the things that they actually talk about, you're like, yeah, that's really clear. And there's another time when they set off and it was sort of like, well, Perry Rhodan, he'd been to space before, and but this time he knew nothing would go wrong, so he wasn't wearing his spacesuit. And I was like, no, wear the spacesuit. And it was talking about the idea that, oh, if they have the spacesuits on, it's not as comfortable and there's more weight and stuff. And I was actually saying to you when I mentioned that, I was like, oh, there was actually three cosmonauts only three people have ever died in space. Yeah. And they actually said, because they were in a Soyuz, and these Soyuz capsules at the time could have taken two people. They took three people.
Yeah.
But they should have only taken two people. In the end, they should have taken two people. But to have two people, they had to have... There would only been space for two people in spacesuits, or three people just squashed without spacesuits. And what they should have done is worn spacesuits, and then they died because they, you know, it was decompression, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah, there was a leak or something.
And so it was weird to actually read about this. And there's quite a few other little points of details. Like, for example, I was reading this at the same time as I was waiting for the SpaceX launch a few days ago, when they were wanting to land the... the stage one of the Falcon 9 rocket on a barge at sea, and they didn't do it because there was some, you know, storms or hurricanes out there, whatever it was, and they said, oh, we'll be able to do it next time. But this is what happens in this book: it takes off and stage one disconnects, and it says, and then mission control took over and landed the first stage back onto Earth again. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, right? Only now are we doing this. Like, this is 1960. This is what, like, trashy German science fiction, which was like, which was just ripping off American science fiction at the time to be a pulp series. You know, what they were thinking science fiction would be is only now just not becoming science fiction. And again, it comes down to, they should have been doing that from the start, but it became a space race. And
exactly.
Was thrown at the problem, yeah. And it turns out what they needed to do, easiest way to get up into space is to not worry about the first stage and just let it fall into the ocean. And those are still there. Apparently, if it was one of these dot-com billionaires, what do they have, like, someone was actually going, oh, we could actually go and find those rocks, because there was so much, so big.
Of course.
There'll be so much
quite
debris.
A lot of them now.
And there's... And like, those boosters are like solid steel or metal, alloy they are.
It's also really, really good metal. It's like one of the best metal that you can find on Earth.
Of course. Whatever the steel is that they use for that, they say, well, those engines will be down at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean somewhere. Yeah. Of course. Because those won't burn up in re-entry. You know,
there won't
first
be
stages.
Any more in Russia, or more specifically in Kazakhstan or wherever.
Kazakhstan.
Where they flop it down. The Russians flop them down on land actually.
Yeah.
And people, like, sometimes they work on their farm, and then the next day, there is a bit of huge metal on the bit of land.
Yeah, and they go out and
then they collect the stuff together.
Scrap metal,
so
yeah.
You in Russia, you have actually recycling people that go and get the
rocket recycling.
Recycling.
Yeah. So anyway, this is the whole point, is that only now is SpaceX going, we don't need to dump these in the ocean or like across the Russian steppes or whatever, right. Kazakhstan. And that's the reason why, of course, I've talked about this before, the orbit of the space station goes very far to the north and very far to the south and north and south, is because when Russia launches rockets from Kazakhstan, it has to shoot them north, so it doesn't drop stuff onto China.
Right.
It actually has to do its launches north to go around. And I made a few other notes here as well. Spacesuits. There's a few other things, and that was one of those fun things. They fly to the moon, but of course there's a few things that they get that they didn't do, or that they could have done differently in this book to save them a lot of trouble, and that is to leave an orbit, like leave something in orbit around the world, around the moon, to help the transmissions back to Earth, you know, from the dark side of the moon, from the other side of the moon, from the non-Earth facing side of the moon. Because of course, what happens? They try a landing. Spoiler: it doesn't go quite correctly, and instead of landing at the South Pole, where they could have explored a little bit across onto the opposite side of the moon, and then also here, and they could have had like sunlight. If they landed directly on the South Pole, they'd have sunlight at all times,
yes.
You know, because there'd always be sun,
right.
So they'd be able to spend some more time there. But they overshot and landed a little bit on the far side of the moon, and so they couldn't communicate with Earth anymore. So you get this little kind of, like, what we think is now as the Martian, you know, it's sort of like, oh, okay, we've got to get out, we've got this truck, and we've got to get this transmitter, and we've got to get from here to there, and there's a little bit of that kind of action
Also, they have to find out because their radio transmission was kind of disturbed by something.
Yeah, interrupted. Yeah,
and they and the thing is, in the Perirodon, you can kind of feel the space race kind of thing. By they don't have the Americans and the Russians, they have the Americans and the Transasians.
Yeah, like the it's like Eurasia. It's going going for like the 1984 kind of thing, sort of like generic East Asian
East area.
Unit.
We don't want to say Russia, but.
It was Russia. There was a space race going on there, but
whatever. And so the Trans-Asian people shot up a rocket at the same time. So there was always the question: what happened to them? Maybe they did something to our radio signal that we couldn't land properly and stuff. Yeah. Turns out it wasn't them.
No, it was aliens. And so they meet aliens and blah, blah, blah. I mean, and that's pretty much the book. I mean, you meet aliens. Well, I mean, there's more stuff going on there as well. We can talk about it. But, like, it's not... There's no real big spoilers in this book.
The story is not very... complex. It's not complex. It is only like what pages? Like in my ebook, it is 184 pages with really big letters already. So it is not very long.
Yeah, like
long.
Say 90 pages of a like.
You can do that in a few hours reading.
PDF thing. Anyway, I only took a few hours to read through this book. But getting onto that a bit more, actually, once they land on the moon, I did actually quite like some of the kind of moon exploration stuff, like stuck on the far side of the moon things there. I liked it when they go, an atomic rocket. So now we've got to wait until the radiation of the surrounding area fades down a bit. So they do quite a bit of like, let's just wait until the radiation goes. They also talk about going and they say, the dust on the moon, when we kick up dust, it takes a long time for the dust to settle. And it's like, no, actually the opposite. It actually doesn't take a long time for the dust to settle. And this is one of those things that like the moon hoax people never get quite right in the videos, or when they look at it and go, this couldn't have happened because of this and this. And they're just doing earth motions, and they're just doing it in slow motion. And Stanley Kubrick was making 2001 and they just used the set from 2001 and all that kind of stuff. But of course, what actually happens is when you kick up dust on the moon, there's no air to actually slow the dust's descent, and we've talked about this before about the feather in the vacuum falling at the same rate as the cannonball in the vacuum or the hammer in the vacuum.
It just falls down.
It turns out same that's speed. What dust does. It goes pff, in the moon. It goes, pff, and you see people. You know when you see those great footage of these people, like you know they're jumping around. Not actually with Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong, because the video quality that we have is really shit. It was like this TV transmission, and they don't have the original film stuff.
But you have people on the moon later after them,
and then the footage is really good quality.
And
it's
this is
HD.
The weird thing for me in my brain. Like the moon now is, that I know it, now I know that they have like 1, 2, 3, 4. Six missions to the moon.
Yeah.
For me, it was always only one. I always
you only see the
knew
footage.
About the first one.
And also in this book, it's quite interesting because he goes, and he was the first one onto the moon, and he did it, and there was no pomp and circumstance, there was no fanfare. He just went out. Yeah, he was the first person on the moon. He just got on with the job.
No flags.
No, there's no flags planting. No, just one small step for a man.
Nothing like that.
One small step for a man, because he messed up the quote. But it is that kind of thing where you go, right. Now in science fiction, you would never write about the first person landing on a planet or the first person to the moon and not have a really good quote.
Really?
You know?
Yes.
And I hate it when, put it this way, I would much rather it be like in this book where it's just the job, they're on a planet, they go out to a new planet, there's no pomp and circumstance, there's no great big quote, there's no I come here for all mankind, we come in peace, all that kind of stuff. But it really annoys me in some books you read, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but it's like, and then he went out and he was the first man on Mars, and of course I don't have to repeat the words now because they're as famous as Buzz Aldrin's first words when he went... No, not Buzz Aldrin. Neil Armstrong's first words when he went... Because I was just looking across the Wikipedia. And I was like, so we don't get to know... So in the world, they're the most famous thing. And it's like, that is a cop-out. And I hate it when authors do that. It's like they know that they can't write something which
is epic as
one small step for man, but one giant leap for mankind. Mm. I think in The Martian, doesn't it say that it's sort of like... I think it's a play on that, I think. But I can't remember. Maybe it's not mentioned there because that's like the third mission to Mars, isn't it? And it's not really about him. But I like in The Martian where it isn't about that. It's just guy going, it's all sticky. It's not made out of cheese. Yeah. Or whatever. That's actually an Eddie Izzard bit.
The good fun things, like you have these little things in this Enterprise Stardust.
Yeah.
Where, for example, Perirodon tells his mates, his guys, to shave. And you think, all right.
Yeah, why should I do this?
Why?
Yeah.
Turns out he wants, because they then turns out they know that they are like other...
Perry Rodan's is suspecting that there's aliens because he's like, aliens. The Asiatic and guys won't get here.
And so he says, we don't want them to see us like primates. We want them to see us like as the representatives of all mankind. This is actually what they...
Think of like 2001. You don't want to think of them as those apes at the start of 2001.
Exactly.
It's like after they throw the bone in the air, it becomes a spaceship. Okay, now this is the view that we want. Sort of like the guys in the Pan Am spaceship things and the woman getting the walking around, you know, it's all looking really cool 60s smart, you know. It's like that's the good view of humanity that we want at the start.
So you have these kind of little we represent mankind and we have to be good to show that we are good people and stuff.
Yeah.
And so at the point when then they encounter the alien people, what's their name?
Archons. Let me have a look. I wrote
Arcanids
it down.
Arcanids or something?
Arcanides.
Arcanides.
Arcanides. Arcanides. Maybe it's a Greek kind of thing. Arcanides. No.
Arconiden in German.
Arconiden. Yeah. Arcanides in English.
Anyway, so they encounter like a person that is really weak. And other people on the ship are weak as well. Turns out they suffer a disease.
And it's like degenerative disease and they're only just playing around in their computer games all the time.
And they're all in virtual reality, hanging out there, enjoying that more than actually doing work.
Yep.
Turns out there's this one woman on board. And turns out that...
No, I don't think there's one woman, but the person in command is the one woman, I think, isn't it?
No, there is this one woman on board.
You say there is this one woman. There is more than one woman on board.
Is it?
Yeah, I think...
No, I think...
Really? There was only the
there
one
was
woman?
This one woman because...
Ah, okay.
It said... there's like I don't really... I can't... I don't have the English... I read the German e-book, so I don't have the English quote, but I can do some rough translation.
Yeah.
Turns out that the disease that they got... is that it gets harder to the man and they really suffer and they get really weak.
Yeah, so this is one of those weird things. As I was reading this thing, it was like, oh, okay, every single character is male. All of the all of the commanders are male, which I understand because the actual NASA was very male-dominated. Women were wives. Wives and girlfriends of astronauts, that's the only job that they had. Waving goodbye, kissing goodbye, that was their function. So it is actually very true to life of how NASA was in the 1960s. Is that great one? Is that, there's a great quote of the first female astronaut, and she was going up into space for a week or whatever it was, and she was asked, is 100 tampons enough for a week in space or something like
that? Ha ha.
No, that's not a joke. It's literally that was the quote or something. Like, or was it like 70 for 3 days? It was just absolutely crazy. Just like like the female form and female like...
I mean, you have to think about these kind of things.
Let me. You keep talking about this woman, and I'll search for tampons in space.
So this woman. It turns out that the disease that they have, that it doesn't get to women too hard. So in their society, women only had house duties.
Yes.
And because when the disease came, suddenly they had to kind of get some other people to do the work that the male people normally did. So the women who were less encountered, like they struggled less with the disease. So they were put in the positions in the powerful important positions.
So she was the captain of the ship, kind of.
So she was the person in charge, but not very friendly, and so they had to. To get win her over, kind of, and he did a good job there, and then
who did a good job?
Perry Rodan
of winning her
over.
No,
wasn't it?
No, it was awful. It was terrible. This is the thing. Like all the way through, like I can in a way, like if I'd gone through the whole book and there'd been no female characters in the book, I'd be like, that wasn't a sexist book. That was just a book. I mean, it was sexist, but it was like okay, it's a book about males in a male world going into space, and it's like I've read lots of science fiction books from this time where it, like the even the idea of a female, I mean, it's more sexist that there's no females, but kind of in a way that a female was inserted into it. And she is obviously, you know, like strong-willed and strong. She's a strong woman. It's like, yeah, she's got a temper on her and she's a stern woman, but she's good-looking. And of course, Perry's going to, there's going to, something's going to happen in book three or four like that. And it's going to be like alien green skin sex bits. But it's so, it's amazing that he is like, ah, we've got to shave to get a good... you know, like, we've got to prepare ourselves, we've got to shave. And as soon as a female turns up, who is an alien but happens to look exactly human,
her name is
Thora. And as soon as Thora turns up, it doesn't matter that she's from a race which is, you know, millions of years in advance and is faster than light travel and can, you know, transport us and
a really,
you know,
really old species.
Yeah, a really old species. Yeah. Like, fantastically advanced. He gives so much deference to the old guy who's ill and is male. And he's like, okay, that's the person who is really in power here. That's the person. And the woman, it's all he does. As soon as she speaks, he's just like, nope, I'm stronger willed than you.
Yeah. And it even says that she is afraid of him.
Just because he's got a strong will. And it's like one of those things. It's like, yes, but my maleness, my puny one system only just managed to get into space status as a human is way, 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 way below yours. However, your status as a female puts you so far
wait,
down.
Wait.
So below. Far down. So far down. So far down that I am now above you in my head. And obviously...
No, not only in his head.
No, actually...
In her head.
In her head. And in the world. And that's just the way the world works. And I was like, oh. And then, so what he says, it's like, no, I will just... Like, you'll say something and I'll just say, no, we're going to do it my way. And it just works.
Yeah.
And
in the end, she
just goes, oh, okay, we'll do it your way. Why? But and it, there's a bit of like a humming and high. It's like, oh, he had to show that Earthmen were
capable.
Actually strong and capable and willful and good. And I did actually. There's actually quite a fun at the end. If it wasn't for that sexy stuff, but there's some other fun stuff that happens at the end, which is that I actually genuinely enjoyed. Where he's like, yes, but because they were level one or level two civilization, not like in the energy output or control of the energy output or whatever it is, like in the other level, like level one civilization, level two, level three. But it's more of like the way that they are writing about it, or like the way that the aliens, Arkanoids think about it here. And they say, oh yeah, when they're at this level, we're not allowed to communicate with them and show them we exist. But when they get to this other level, and it turns out that the difference between those two levels is, are they exploring the space? Are they going into deep space or whatever?
Yes, exactly.
And it turns out this mission that Perry Rhodan was on is the one that...
puts them up to that next level
so he can make contact with them, and they can start using like swapping technology and can start doing this and that little twist is actually good. And then at the very end of the book, I do actually really like what happens at the end. He's like, okay, we're now flying back with some of these aliens, and we've got some alien technology, and we're going to fly home. And I actually do quite like the non-rah-rah-rah, yay, America. You can kind of tell this isn't an American book. 1961. When he goes home, and it's not like, and then we landed back in the Mojave Desert or wherever you're going to land, like, oh, in the ocean or back down to Florida or wherever. Yeah, so we go back down and we land back there. Oh, no, because they don't take off from Florida, do they? It's from some missile base in... New Mexico, wherever it is. Nevada. So it's not like, yeah, we're going to go down there, and then we've got all this alien technology and these aliens on board, and with this we can then just swoop over Russia and take out Russia or the USSR and the Soviets. We take it all, and that's the end of the Cold War. Yay! Now, in an American book, that's where it would have gone.
Yes.
You know, sort of like, yay!
America wins.
America wins was here. He goes, no, I'm going to go and land in Mongolia, and we're going to fly all the way around the world so everyone knows we're coming. And then instead of landing in the USA, I'm going to land in Mongolia.
As far out as possible.
As far
so
as
nobody
possible.
Gets to us.
So by the time anyone can get to us, be it Asiatic, be it Russia, be it Americans, whoever's going to get here first, already everyone in the world is going to know that we're here, and they can't hide the aliens, can't hide the technology.
Exactly.
It's not going to be covered up. Because
you
do get a feeling at the start, like it's literally, they get all the journalists together and say, yeah, we're doing a mission to the moon, and it's going to take us 3 days to get to the moon. or like, you know, how long it takes. Mm-hmm. We've all seen Apollo 13. We know how long those guys were drifting out there. And they actually say to all of the journalists, okay, everyone, keep writing down notes. Nobody is leaving this room. They're in this, like, this space base, and nobody is allowed to leave for 3 days until they get to the moon. It's like, oh wow, that they really, like, in this book there is this whole thing about the Joint Defense Force or the NATO command or whatever. Is like, yeah, these guys will crack down, and they would have taken control. And that's actually a bit clever bit of writing at the start. I thought, oh, that's a bit heavy-handed that all of the journalists are going to be kept locked in a room for 3 days until the good news comes back and it's like, yay, we're actually on the moon. It was a big secret, but now there we are.
The question is, what would have happened if not?
What? What do you mean, if not?
Like, if it would have been a failure.
Well, it was a failure, and they couldn't. That was the whole point. And then the story, they could, in the end, it's like, oh, we can't keep these people locked up forever. The story has got to come out, and then the story comes out. It's like, oh, well, there was a mission to the moon that didn't go according to plan, blah, blah, blah. You know, so, but you understand, actually, no, the way that NASA works, or the way that, you know, all of this, the NATO and all these different forces work, is that they would have covered it up, they would have taken control, and they would have manipulated the message. But Perry Rhodan is like, no, we're bigger than that. We've got to unite Earth. We've got to be humans.
Except because there's so much humans, like, represent one race, one species that
because,
we are.
Because there's so much else going on in the universe that we don't know about, that's brand new to us. But we've got to be united on Earth to face the future in interstellar space.
And I really, really like this message at the end.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty terribly written, but when you get to the end of it and you read that and you go, oh, that is actually quite a... It is one of those moments where you just go, ah, like when Neil Armstrong went to the moon and said, one small step for a man, but one giant leap for mankind, I hear claim the moon for all mankind, not just... It's quite specifically not like, yes, the moon is now American. He's actually saying, no, I claim it for all mankind. And I have read science fiction stories, I can't remember which ones now, but who say, oh, that was actually not scripted. The real script was, like, one small step for an American, or one small step for a man, one giant leap for America.
Yeah, you know? Of course.
And I don't know if that's real or if that was one of the quotes that was there. Like, but it by making it, you know, one small step for man, one giant leap for America, or, you know, that could have been the original quote.
This is something like you always have to have in mind. If there are things out there and they are advanced, they will have gotten all the radio transmissions that were there.
Yeah. So
and if there's a person and they can they can find out what English language is and how to understand it. They will then understand, and it's a lot better to have this out there in the endless universe.
Well, again, it's like in Contact, the movie Contact, the first transmission. I was talking to you about this the other day. The first transmission was from a Hitler rally, it was the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games or whatever it was, you know. Yeah. And you're like, oh, okay, that's the first transmission that reached the next star over. I think I was talking about that on a book that I read recently, the Three Body Problem, which is awful. And then that was one of those massive, the biggest plot hole in the whole book was that. It's like, yeah, they would have heard, you know, they'd have heard like 70 years of television and radio transmissions from next door, but they apparently missed that.
They can slowly learn all the languages.
Yeah,
they could
have. And that, of course, that's what's happened in this book. The aliens speak perfect
English. What a surprise.
No, but I do understand it because they were there to study Earth.
No.
They came to
actually,
study Earth.
They actually speak German.
Oh, is that what
happened? Right, I mean, they speak German.
In the book,
it's German, so they speak German.
But the point is, they speak English because at the time, of course, in 1961, the vast majority of the entertainment beaming up and the NASA. I'm just saying that I don't mind if a alien species is on the moon is on the moon specifically to study Earth. That they learn English. I mean, I don't have any problem with that because that's what they're there for. That's what they're there for.
Okay.
So you've got some different characters there. We could go through the characters and say, this character's like this and this character's like that. But there's nothing to say.
There's nothing really like to go. This is basically it. There's nothing really to go more in depth because the writing is often really clumsy.
Oh, it's just like this happened, then this happened, then that happened, and the
sentence structure is super easy and like.
Also, everybody talks as though they are... I mean, this might be the English translation, but everybody talks as though they are, like, written. You know, the people's voices, what they're used to talking is like... Well, actually, I mean, maybe I could just... you talk a bit more. Let's see if I can just bring up an example. Like, just any time that we get any...
I don't know.
It's different. It's all technical. Every time someone talks to each other, the way that they talk to each other. So this is going. I've never believed in anything before. I believe this. I accept this all completely, 100% without reservation. But good God, what have we gotten into? Where is this all going to leave? Things will be chaos in Washington. They'll never believe this. You know, that's actually some of the better writing, some of the better dialogue. I was just thinking, but some of the early stuff when people are like, when they're like, they land on the moon and they're kind of like talking. But amongst themselves.
Let's go to the chapter and read out the beginning of the chapter, because then we are both in. You don't have chapters, right?
Yeah, well, there's some chapters. It's not as easy as that to get through. But I'm just saying that, like, the way that they talk to each other. Like, filling this tent costs us a few gallons of liquid oxygen. No, actually, but when they're talking about technical stuff, I don't mind it so much, because then the technical clarity is good.
Yeah, but it is very clear. It's so technical that the normal talking is
becomes
so clumsy.
The same ponderous technical. Actually, if you think about the thing, it's good. You worry unnecessarily. And it's difficult to find an example just off the top, because it's a PDF, so it's difficult to make those notes. Otherwise, right. if it was an ebook, I would have made some different notes. Mm. Manoli thought of his wife and Fletcher of his baby. No one talked about it, but everyone knew it. Here was a situation that demanded a firm hand and an iron will to keep things under control. Rodan possessed both these characteristics. You know, that is pretty much what we have of characters. Manoli, Dr. Manoli, is a doctor who has a wife. Fletcher has a baby. And that's it. Like, that's the only thing that we ever really think about. Also, they have weapons with them. I'd forgotten about that. And that did feel a bit like they went to the moon and suddenly, yes, and now let's get out the rocket launchers. And like, what? Yeah. Rocket launchers?
What?
Like, what's... And that reminded me so much of Armageddon. You know the movie Armageddon, where they get up there and suddenly someone gets out this machine gun and starts shooting things. I'd be like, wait a second. They were trying
to
save
security.
What is their security? No, I understand in this book they had rockets, but I'm just saying in Armageddon they get all the way to the asteroid and then they go on this truck.
He's talking about the weapon, and it has
no recoil,
no bullet things.
Yeah. other things. Oh, it talks about the positronic brain, and I was like, that's an Asimov thing? Yeah, it is. They're just completely even says it on the Wikipedia page. It just lifted positronic brains, and I'm like, okay, I don't mind, because positronic brains now is a thing that is just in science fiction. You know, I can't remember. I was reading something before, a few months ago, and it was just like, yes, and this android has a positronic brain, and now that's just a thing that when it comes up in science fiction, I don't even worry about it. It's like an Ansible, you know, for
This is what I was talking at the beginning, that the German science fiction just takes things from all the books.
This is from 1961, I think, from before, at the time, in 1961, I don't think positronic was like just available for anyone.
No.
You know, now in science fiction, positronic brains and three laws of robotics—that is now just part of it. Mm. Whereas here, it did feel like this is 1961. That's a bit early to be ripping off Asimov in that way. Do I have any more notes here?
Anyway, no. the sentence structure is also really easy. You have like three word sentences, and then like maybe six word sentences, and followed by seven word sentences. And you always have the basic structure. You never have like a construction where you have a main sentence and then a side sentence, and main sentence again. It's always like da 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 da. So
here we go. Problems are made to be solved. Whether we want to or not, we must attack this affair. Yeah, it's always when they're referring to what they're referring to. They don't just say stuff and in context we work out what they're referring to. They always spell it out. It's sort of like, and now what we need to do is in this situation where we are stranded on the moon and we need to do this. What we need to do is get that thing, but they never say that thing. We need to get that compounding rocket device and bring it to the thing like this, and goes, and what should we do with this thing? But they don't say like, over here, it's not always just like over here by the entrance to the bloody, like, you know, everything is spelled out over and over, like, in this. And when you read people talking like that, like when you read that's what the dialogue is, you're just like, these aren't humans. They're like technical robots communicating unambiguously with each other, and that's just not what humans do. And I think that some ambiguity in the dialogue, made up for by the clarity elsewhere in the writing, goes a long way to make characters human. But there isn't clarity elsewhere in the writing, so it all has to be this unambiguous dialogue where you go,
I mean, there's a sentence here, his blue eyes were begging wordless for excuse.
Yeah.
I just translated
literally
wordlessly word
for an
by
excuse.
Word.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
Anyway, so this is the whole thing. The writing isn't great. The story is basic. It's okay. It has some really fun things in it.
That, like I say, there's some stuff at the end which kind of let me off at the start. But it's no, it's still just a 2-star story.
You really, I don't even,
What?
Yeah, two.
Two,
okay.
Two and a half, two? What would you say?
Yeah.
It's got like 3.4 on Wikipedia. But more to the point is that I do understand how, like, not just this story. If it continues like this or gets a little better over the first, you know, they said they planned 30 episodes. They planned 30 issues.
Yeah.
I understand why this became a thing that people were really interested
in. And the thing is, we would actually have to, like, get some random picks from the later issues to actually get into how is the rating evolving? How is everything evolving? But we're not going to do that. But if anyone out there wants to do it and wants to give us a feedback, I would like that.
What, if somebody else
Somebody else wants to read a bit more Perry Rhodan, if they know any of the languages that I said that where the books are published, or if you just want to learn some German to just... If you want to learn German,
you think this is a good way. You think this is a good way?
I mean, can work.
It's quite simple.
The writing is very easy and very easy to understand, apart from all the technical stuff.
Mm.
But lots of it... Yeah, well...
Okay, so what else are we going to do? Are we going to do more German science fiction?
Because
this is German science fiction. I recently did Chinese science fiction. Maybe we can go and try some other...
Some other science fiction.
Yeah, we talked about some other things.
Some international science fiction.
Oh, no, actually, next episode, I've got to review the fantasy book, The Darkness That Comes Before.
Okay.
And then I'll record that tomorrow. But also, we can record the culture wrap-up.
Yes.
And then I think the next series we're going to do... If we're going to do a series, we've got Leviathan Wakes, which is that called The Expanse? No, what's that called? Anyway, this is another series, Expanse novels, I think it's called Expanse. So we're both reading that as an ebook. And then what I thought we could do is actually go back. We've been talking about this for a few years now. We could go back and read my science fiction from 2008, Minding Tomorrow.
We can
give that a go, because I've not read that for I probably read it last when I wrote the last in that series, on that 3 series. So Minding Tomorrow, Combat, and then Broken Glass.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually, when I've just been thinking about it, I haven't read it, but I think I've got quite a lot to say. Even stuff like, it's called Broken Glass and it's talking about augmented reality. And I wrote that and released it before Google Glass became a thing. And now Google Glass is no longer a thing. And yet my book is still called Broken Glass, even though it's not actually referring to that. But it's one of those things that I think this book is my writing about this kind of stuff is actually, in some ways, becoming way more out of date, but in other ways, becoming more relevant as this technology of augmented reality. You know, there's the new Windows,
the big chunky.
Well, there was a Windows thing that they had
VR
the other day.
Yeah,
it's not VR;
huge.
It's like AR. You know, this other stuff. So that might be fun to go back and talk about that and the time travel and it'll be full spoilers. That's what I'm trying to say. So if you want to read along, this will be a read along of Minding Tomorrow and Combat and maybe Get That Rot of My Face as well,
mm-hmm.
and Broken Glass,
because
they'll go. So we'll do that as a series. That'll also be a read-along thing. So read those books first. You can find them on my website, lukeburge.com/fiction or something like that. You'll be able to get there. And you can get them for free if you want to, because we're going to be talking about full spoilers in there. Boy, are there some spoilers in those things.
Yeah.
Those are ready to be spoiled, I think. Wrote that in 2008. And also what I'm going to do is I'm going to go upstairs and I'm going to find my first... which I wrote in maybe 2002 or 2003, my first ever my first ever manuscript of when I first wrote Minding Tomorrow, because I actually did it as a National Novel Writing Month NaNoWriMo novel in 2008. But I know that
upstairs. Did you do it by hand?
Yeah, well, it was just in a A4 pad. I was writing out, in longhand. And I'll go back and read my first attempts at writing
can't
a novel.
Read that.
Well, no, I will read my first attempts at writing this novel and then compare it to actually what I wrote in 2008.
Yeah.
But now it's 7 years later after I wrote that. Oh, yeah, 6.5 years. Right, let's wrap it up. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge on Twitter. Juliana is on Goodreads and so am I. So you can become our friends there. You can sign up for the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads and chat with other science fiction book review podcast listeners there.
And if you have other international science fiction that you want us to read or
check out, drop it in there. There's a great thread called Science Fiction I Would Like to See, or books I would like to see reviewed right there. Yeah. And I do get them, like which is good. Also, if you got a book that you want me to read, and if it's on Audible and I can just spend a credit on it, and it's under, like, say, if it's between like 7 and 10 hours, I'll probably just do it. You know, if it's a book on Audible which is 48 hours, or if it's only available as an ebook, you know, I set aside ebook and other non-audible, like non-audiobook listening for other things. But yeah, so that's it. Email me, luke@juggler.net, with everything else. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.